Welcome back to Dark Florida. I'm your host, Brooke Moreland. And on this episode, I sat down with Jason Tapp, the man behind Spooky Charlotte. Jason's work goes far beyond ghost stories and eerie legends. He actively is restoring forgotten cemeteries and using his deep connections to the paranormal and local history to give back to the Charlotte community in powerful ways. But that's just the beginning. Jason brings some bold claims to the table, including a controversial take on the legendary Patterson-Gimlin film. Did the iconic Bigfoot footage actually originate from Charlotte? Could the infamous costume have been created by none other than showman Philip Morris? We also dig into a little-known cryptid that might just give you nightmares. A mysterious shapeshifter with the body of a panther and the head and wings of an owl. You won't want to miss this one. But before we get started, wherever you're listening, please be sure to drop a 5-star review and share the show with a friend. It really helps. Be sure to follow along to catch everything happening behind the scenes on Instagram at Dark Florida Podcast. Now, let's get spooky. Welcome back to another episode of Dark Florida. Tonight, I am joined by Jason Tapp, aka Spooky Charlotte, from the popular Instagram page Spooky CLT. I'm just really excited to have you here. We connected through a fellow podcaster friend of mine, shout out Nick at the Occult Rejects. So, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Could you just let the audience know a little bit about yourself and what Spooky Charlotte is?
Yes. So I run the Instagram account Spooky CLT. CLT is short for Charlotte. It's the area code. It's kind of something that Charlotte has adapted as part of its identity. And the whole point of the page is to convince people that Charlotte is a spooky place, whether they live there or they do not live there. I'm doing my best to kind of be like a spooky PR agent for the city. And I'm doing that because Charlotte is a unique city in the sense that by no means is it new. It was around, you know, pre-revolutionary days. North Carolina is an incredibly historic state itself. But there are a lot of transplants in the city and a lot of people. Like, it's hard to find natives who have stuck around their entire lives. And because of that, there is a bad reputation that Charlotte doesn't have any history or culture. And I have done my best to fight that the best way I know how, which is by talking about spooky topics that are relevant to Charlotte, the Queen City. And when I say spooky topics, I don't just mean ghosts. Although I do talk a lot about like ghost stories, paranormal and folklore, but also like true crime, connections with horror movies, just different counterculture groups. I do my best to show off that Charlotte is a interesting place through the eyes of all things spooky. By doing that, I've been doing this Instagram account for about 8 years now, and somehow I managed to find people who are interested in this type of stuff. I have over 30,000 followers on Instagram right now. And by doing that, I decided that I also am a bit of a community organizer. So I host a lot of volunteer events as well, particularly surrounding local cemeteries. Because if you're a spooky person, you're inevitably going to end up in your local cemetery. So I'm doing my best to preserve the history that we have, as well as get other people passionate about preservation and learning about the city and everything it has to offer or has offered in the past. That is my long-winded explanation about who I am and what I do.
I love that. I'm a bit of a history nerd myself. So it's kind of fun when we get to blend the fringe in with a little bit of our passion there. And I think that it's important to remember our history and where we came from, because sometimes, if not, what do they say? We're bound to repeat it. And I think so much of our history is being lost or forgotten. So I love that there's a real highlight of that with your work and with your conservation efforts. Are there any particular projects that you're involved with now?
Yes. So a few things. One of them is I am now like the official, unofficial caretaker for a historic Black cemetery in town. You and I, we talked about this on the Occult Rejects podcast. So I won't give all the details, but it's something where I truly believe that I was asked to do this by a ghost, and now I feel responsible for this forgotten cemetery. And I've been working on it for over a year now, and we have cleaned up that landscaping for that cemetery. And I've cleaned most of the headstones in there, just, you know, scraping off the lichen and putting some solution on it to make it pop. But the landscaping was the big one, and we pretty much accomplished all of that. There's a little bit more I want to do and add to it, you know, as projects overall. But that is one thing I'm working on. And then another one, which is the big one, is right in the center of Uptown, there is a cemetery called Old Settlers. It's just about as old as the city. The first people buried there were right before revolutionary times. And it's in bad shape right now overall, but it's like a city park. So I am on the board of directors for the historic Elmwood Pinewood, which covers Old Settlers as well. And we are doing like the first round of restoration for it that we've done, or that has been done in the past 30 years, I think. So we're raising money for that, but specifically inside that cemetery, there is the Hardy plot. And it was a family of Irish immigrants, engineers, architects. They really put their print on the city of Charlotte. And they had this beautiful grouping of box tombs, which looks like those like old wooden, or not wooden, stone sarcophaguses, where they're like above the ground, but the bodies are still buried 6 feet under. It's just kind of was like a show of, you know, I have the money to buy these rocks, so I do it. But anyways, this 250 plus year poplar tree fell down next to it during Hurricane Helene back in October 2024, and it destroyed the plot, destroyed the iron gate that's surrounding it. So now we are raising funds specifically for that plot to get it fixed, because I mean, number one, it's smack dab in the center of the cemetery, and it's kind of like the crown jewel of it almost. But two, you know, I'm put in a position where I may be able to raise the funds to have it fixed, so I feel the responsibility to do so. And one of the ways I'm doing it leads me to my next topic of proving that the Patterson-Gimlin Bigfoot footage was in fact a hoax by way of talking to a ghost. So, but before I go into that, I wanted to ask for your opinion, because when we talked about this on the Occult Rejects podcast, you said that you believe that that footage was correct or was accurate.
Right.
Like it was real footage.
I do. Well, okay, so I will say in the Bigfoot world, that is probably next to JFK, one of the most torn apart pieces of footage that's out there. Anybody has looked at it and examined it, and there's definitely arguments in both sides that I enjoy. I try to keep an open mind. I would love to hear more about this. That was one of the things I found really interesting, because it is so widely debated. In my heart, I want to believe it's real. I think that's where I kind of land on it.
So I agree, but at the same time, I have never looked at that footage and thought that that is not a hoax. Just all my life, I believe in Bigfoot 100%. Like there is something out there that is ape-like, that is man-like, but I've never thought that the Patterson-Gimlin film was right. I've always thought it's a person in a suit. However, in Charlotte, North Carolina, there is a guy, or was a guy, named Philip Morris, and he was like just the greatest showman type person, where he was literally like a ringmaster for the circus. He was a late night movie, like a horror movie host, like Elvira. He, like his name is of the Morris Costumes, which is like the number one competitor for Spirit Halloween without directly competing, because it's like Halloween Express and franchises and stuff. But that company is like a big deal. Like they used to have the costume licensing rights for like Spider-Man and Batman and like just you name it, to the point where what Philip Morris says is that back in, what was it, 67, Patterson called them up requesting a gorilla suit, not saying what it was for, but they ordered a gorilla suit, which was what Philip Morris was known for. He was making gorilla suits in the basement of his house in Charlotte, North Carolina, using them in movies and TV shows and just like circus acts around. And he sent it over, and years later, he saw that it was, or when he was watching the PNG, he said that he recognized his gorilla suit and that it was modified, and that they had given instructions on like how to make it more ape-like, things like putting the shoulder pads on, putting sticks in the hands so they elongate them, as well as like You know, he said that they modified the face to where it looked like that more iconic, you know, patch of fur where the eye is, or non-patch of fur where the eye is. But so he claims in his heart that the Patterson-Gimlin film used one of his suits, but he didn't say anything about it until the early 2000s because he himself is a showman and he wanted to respect, you know, Patterson and Gimlin for doing what they did. So, and then there was times when he was asked to recreate the suit and he made his own like updated version of it. A lot of people say that it's not accurate at all, but when you look at the two of them, it's like, all right, well, you know, you can, if you can do it, like if you had the right size person in the suit and you did the same modifications they did, like it would, I think the old footage gives it a lot of grace with the graininess and stuff. But so he went to his deathbed claiming that this thing was real. Now, going back to my original cemetery preservation work. So a way that I am raising money to, or one of the ways that I raise money for this Hardy plot is I hosted a historic and paranormal event tour of the like the retail warehouse of Morris Costumes here in Charlotte. It's two floors, a lot of space. And we had all these people show up for or this ticketed event. We sold out and we went through the history of Morris Costumes, kind of like the I gave you the bullet points. But we had the goal in mind that we were going to ask the spirit of Philip Morris if he did, in fact, create that Bigfoot costume. And it's not like we were just pulling this out of thin air. The staff and Morris's family, who are still active with the business, they all said that that shop is haunted. And then once he passed in 2017, that they felt that he personally was there. By way of like, there's a lot of poltergeists in the space, there's phantom smells. And then they were saying particularly for him that he was playing jokes on them or would make him like, you know, flicker the lights or do whatever ghosts do to get attention when they were talking about him. And I think it was more so like that he keeps tabs on his family because his grandson, Sean, who's now the CEO of the company, he goes and talks about like Bigfoot and his grandfather and just like the business all over. And he did a Charlotte podcast that was on camera. And when he was talking, like telling this similar story about Bigfoot and his grandfather, the lights in the studio flickered. And like, that was the people who work at the studio said that's never happened before. It just happened to happen during that segment at that particular time when they were talking about his father haunting or his grandfather haunting him. So there was already like, you know, this lore of the shop that he is there. So that evening we did do a number of experiments. I paired up with the Charlotte Area Paranormal Society. They were there that evening, so they were kind of leading what they do, and they were using the EMF detectors. They were using dowsing rods. They had this EMF detector that was like in a chain, like a jump rope almost, as well as like the spirit boxes and different things. And overall, there was a lot of activity that night. One group said that they communicated with a spirit that through the spirit box literally said, like, I used to work in stage lighting. In like fragmented sentences. And then there was a medium there who believes that she connected with someone who passed in a car accident. And they asked if it happened like before or after the shop was created. And they said before. So it was literally on the land before the shop was there. And then one particular group felt like they were being followed by him, and his grandson was part of this group, but they experienced phantom smells of a carnival, so kind of like cotton candy, they said, as well as elephant urine, two different spots that happened. And then two people, they broke off and they had the EMF reader, and they were literally like led by the lights, like showing, you know, should I go left or right? And it would be, or left or right. And it would go on right. Or, you know, it would just direct them where to go. And they ended up on this box that had like the circus stage rings, you know, when they like click them through and they become one, which is his main, like his thing as a ringmaster. That was like the one thing he did. He wasn't like a juggler or fire or whatever. Like he did the rings and it directed them directly to this box. And it was a full like row of different stage props and magic tricks So it wasn't like that was the only thing that was over there. He would only talk to the women of the group on the dowsing rods. Like, only the women's dowsing rods were affected. And his grandson said that, yeah, he was definitely friendlier with women than he was with men. And then words on the spirit box came up, like prank and whiskey, both things that were connected to him. And then finally, when they were asking, like, did you create the Bigfoot costume used in the Patterson-Gimlin film? The first time of the night that jump rope of EMF detectors across the board lit up, which we interpreted as he was waiting for someone to ask him and he had his chance to answer. That being said, I am a skeptic at heart. So I know I led the witness for all of these people to ask and to believe this. So I definitely tainted the experiment group, but I'm excited that, like, first off, I'm excited about the story that little Charlotte, North Carolina has a part of the story in the Patterson-Gimlin film, and that all roads for that evening led us to believe that Philip Morris was there and that he was also confirming what we were asking him. And I want to tell more people about it. So that's why I reached out to you. I was like, you're a Bigfoot lady. Let's talk about Bigfoot.
I would love that. You heard it here. Now we're setting the record straight that Charlotte is cementing its spot in the Bigfoot lore in history, because that is so incredible. I love that you had the forethought to go in there and you're like, if I have my one opportunity to ask Philip Morris, I am going to set the record straight tonight. Instead of just asking basic questions, you're like, no, we're getting down to business. I need to know.
And it didn't even click at first. So I had talked to Sean Morris, who's the grandson of Philip, who's like the CEO now. And him and I were just looking for ways to collaborate because, you know, I'm all about Charlotte being spooky, and he literally has a like multi-million dollar franchise of being spooky. So we were like, well, how can we work together? And then this is something that I've done in the past where I do my history and paranormal tours as a way of fundraising. That is honestly how I operate. Like, I don't make any money off of this page. I'm doing it for the fun, and I'm doing it as a way to like community organize and just try to get people to have fun in Charlotte. So when I was looking for fundraisers to do for this particular Hardy plot, I was like, well, we can do a ghost hunt in Morris costumes because they've always said it's haunted. And like 3 days before the event happened, I called Sean and I was like, hey, I have this thought, like Philip Morris, he claimed that, you know, everything I just said about Bigfoot, like, can we ask him and can we make this part of the event? You know, because I want to be as respectful as possible to his family, to his grandfather, to the legacy. And Sean was like, hell yeah, let's do it. Because I want to know too. And this is something that he's traveled around the country also telling people about. And so the fact that his spirit grandfather still agreed with him in the afterlife and didn't give any indication that it was a hoax or any, or that he was, you know, lying about it, he was all for it. So I did do it with the permission of the family is what I'm trying to say.
I love that you guys were able to collaborate on that. I love the commitment to your community work. I always say, like, you should be the change that you want to see. I love people who get passionate about their communities where we live, because I really do think that oftentimes, people forget that where you live is a really cool, and there is history all around you. There's community around you. I love that you're really giving back in such a meaningful way that you're able to pursue your passion of the paranormal history and some of that spooky and give back to it. And as far as this costume goes, that is really interesting. And I mean, he would know his work if he saw it. So I think the fact that he you know, viewed it and was like, that's mine.
I agree. But also with that being said, he was a showman, and he, like, if he were to claim that that was his suit when it wasn't, you could kind of see why he would do it as like a, you know, a larger than life person. I can see him trying to pull that stunt as well. And now that I'm, you know, going around making this claim, I have started looking. I'm like 4 episodes into that Astonishing Legends breakdown of the Patterson-Gimlin film, like the 14-hour long one. And I'm trying to go in with an open mind, even though I am also going into kind of tools to defend my stance in the future. Because I've put this claim on Reddit and they were not happy about it. People go hard for the Patterson-Gimlin film. But like so far, what they're saying and how they're breaking it down, like I'm like, number one, like people talk about how the suit looks like its muscles moving. I don't agree with that in the least
that is
bit.
I was going to say that is definitely an argument you hear is that in some of the enhanced footage, they say that you can see some of the muscle striations and movement that baloney. Would be maybe absence in, say, a suit or something.
Yeah, baloney. It looks like felt rubbing up against felt. And then, like, even before all of this happened, a woman that I know that is a puppeteer and makes costumes for movies, and she's literally the caretaker for Sir Purr, who is the mascot of the Charlotte Panthers. Or the Carolina Panthers. She, being a mascot suit maker, looks at the Patterson Gimlin suit and she's like, that's a fake. So I want to put her on recording doing that and seeing how she holds up with the comments. But the people who are diehard about it being real, like, you gotta, that's, I disagree. I do have, like, you know, I want it to be real. I want to have there to be that smoking gun footage of Bigfoot, but I just do not think that this is it.
And you know what? Shout out to Astonishing Legends. That's a fantastic podcast. I haven't heard that episode. I should go back and listen to it.
Well, it's not one episode. It's like seven, and each of them are 2 hours long.
They did a deep dive?
This is the deepest dive I've ever seen in podcast format. I'm not joking when I say it's 14 hours worth of stuff. I don't know what they're going to talk about for the next six episodes or whatever, but I'm in it.
Yeah, you're invested. And I think that's important, especially like you said, because you're making a bold claim and there are a lot of believers. You should at least know the other side. I appreciate being able to be educated on both sides of an issue there. Have you yourself, or has Sean Morris or the Morris family, have they reached out to Patterson Gimlin's estate or any of those people for a comment?
I can't speak for them, but I know that he has provided stuff for, like, Bigfoot documentaries. So I wouldn't be surprised if they have, like, he's spoken at conventions before. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if they've discussed this in the past.
Where that area was filled, Bluff Creek, the area has changed so much today than what it was back in the 60s. And that really is really one of the most picked apart pieces of footage that's out there. What I do just like about that or any other kind of old footage is that it's the last thing we have really before this big AI boom has come across.
And that's Photoshop the part. And
So that was in the 60s. They didn't have that level of AI technology where we're at today, because now it's like, I feel like
you can't believe anything.
Yeah. You can't.
Now, one thing I was curious about for you is I've been catching up on your podcast and some of the conversations that you have had with people about Bigfoot are very similar to some of the conversations I've been having with people about aliens here in Charlotte. There is a group that has a Charlotte chapter of, they just call it Close Encounter, CE. Mm-hmm. Is that something you've had in Florida?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay. So I've started going to those meetups that they have in Charlotte, and it's all about consciousness and connecting with the extraterrestrials, in quotations or whatever you want to call them, through, like, mindfulness and meditation and, like, being present and stuff. And that same stuff is coming up with Bigfoot. Is that something that you subscribe to?
As far as some of that consciousness and the hive mind?
Yeah.
I have met people and I've talked to people who have experienced this mind speak. They've experienced, like you said, that higher level of consciousness. Sometimes it's like they'll exit and enter the woods in different places, hundreds of miles apart, and experience something unique or similar that ties the two together. I have not experienced it myself, but I'm hearing it from these people and I'm cataloging it. And I'm really curious about it myself, especially with that sort of higher consciousness with the extraterrestrials or aliens or those higher beings. There is a consciousness connection that has been brought up lately, I think, in the Bigfoot world.
Yeah. My thought prior to all of this was that, like, Bigfoot was almost like the last of a subsect of humans that were giants, like, you know, ancient tribes of giant people is something that comes up a lot in, like, the conspiracy circles. And it's something that I believe in. Like, there's always been giants present in folklore. Mm-hmm. And it didn't really click for me. You know, we're American. Some of our folklore, even if it's boring, is like Paul Bunyan, giant. the Henry or John Henry Irons was a giant. Like, even sometimes Johnny Appleseed is depicted about as like a giant. So like a species of giants who are in the mountains, and the last of them, if they're out there living in the woods, wearing the skins of things that they've hunted, growing out their hair, not wearing shoes, I would not be surprised in the least if people came across that type of mountain man and described what we know as Bigfoot. And that's kind of what started the lore, but I don't think it's around anymore. And that would also explain, you know, why you don't find any dead Bigfoot or Bigfoot bones. It's just because it's humans. So that's a thought that I used to have. And I kind of stand by it, along with like the fear. Like, a lot of times our fears are ingrained into almost like our DNA. Like, we still are pre-designed to do certain things, like, you know, pick out snakes in the forest floor, or to be afraid of the dark. So I wouldn't be surprised if, like, evolutionarily speaking, we are always supposed to be having the back of our minds, like, be afraid of that larger being in the woods. Those are just my personal Bigfoot conspiracies.
I love that, because it would be impressed upon our consciousness. Because to take it back even further, another popular giant, David and Goliath. I mean, that one is right out of the Bible. And yeah, if we were experiencing these giant beings, and then that goes back to Genesis 6 and kind of some of the stuff
Nephilim.
With... Right. Well, because yeah. When you were talking about giants... So the theory there is that the fallen angels came down and interbred with women of Earth, and mm-hmm. then they begot a line of giants far surpassing anything that we can comprehend. Like, take Bigfoot on complete steroids, more like Godzilla level size, right? That these giants were supposedly like really big. And then that was part of the reason for the flood, was to rid the Earth of these giants, because they were cannibalistic. They didn't abide by the laws. They were like lawless in a sense, and they were just corrupting yeah. God's creation. All that to say that the bigger giants were wiped out, but there was this subsect of smaller ones, or a few, that remained. And then through time, now they're still large by our comparison, especially when you're hearing sightings. I think the latest one I heard was a 10-footer, which is insane to think about. Mm-hmm. Is out there.
North mythology, they had their land of giants, and also Greek mythology too. They all have their own versions of a higher level or a higher class of being.
Yeah. And the indigenous people here in America talked about, the Native Americans recounts as some of the things I find the most compelling. I'm a big Dave Politis fan, and one of his books, which is my favorite, is, it's called The Hoopa Project. And he went out to the Bluff Creek area in California, to the Hoopa Reservation, and he did extensive research with the people. And it was really cool, because they don't usually let a lot of outsiders and stuff like that in. So he had this excellent rapport with them. And he brought a sketch artist along with him, Harvey Pratt, who worked for the FBI. And I forget how many, if you look at his sketches,
has the credentials.
Yeah. So hearing their accounts, they said that the Bigfoot, aka Sasquatch or Skunk Ape, was just an offset tribe that they just didn't interact with, like a giant tribe. So I've always found that theory to be really interesting.
And you can 100% seeing us as humans being afraid of that, and being like, the only way we can live side by side is if you're not there. Like, you can see us doing that. And it's not crazy to think that we just kept it out of history books to make the conversation easier.
Yeah, I agree.
But with that being said, on the topic of cryptids, Charlotte has its own cryptids as well. Before we talk about the cat owl, because I want to know your thoughts, I'm just going to tell you first about the Lake Norman monster. And it's, you know, if you're in the United States, and I'm sure this is international as well, but in the United States, there are tens of thousands of man-made lakes. With the exception of the Great Lakes and like Salt Lake, most of the lakes you have been in or seen are man-made, damming up rivers to create hydroelectric power, as well as kind of be able to, you know, shape the geography that we design. So in North Carolina, right outside Charlotte, there is Lake Norman, and it's the largest man-made lake in North Carolina. I think the coastline is over 500 miles long. There's lore that there's a Lake Norman monster. The first rebuttal I always hear is, oh, but it's a man-made lake. It was made in the 1960s. Well, if it's a man-made lake, then who's to say it's not a man-made monster? Because there is a nuclear power plant that uses the waters from the lake to cool down its like core. And then that water goes in, hyperheated, you know, allegedly kills everything inside of it. And then it's just released back into the lake as heated water. So who's to say that like that type of relationship has mutated in a way some of the local fish? And some of the real stories of that happening is, number one, they have found catfish the size of like small SUVs, just because the mixture of the hot water from the nuclear power plant, as well as no real big predators in the man-made lake, these catfish have grown to incredible size. And then there's also a problem with fish being born with both male and female organs that fish have. So there is, in fact, proof that inside the lake there are mutations happening. All that to say that when the .com started happening, someone who lived close by did create LakeNormanMonster.com as a way to track sightings, and that bad boy has been active since the 80s. Like, you can't go longer than 6 months without someone submitting something. So people are seeing stuff in the lake. Once again, I'm a skeptic, so a lot of the sightings, I admit, are people who just don't know what like a gar looks like, or they don't really know how big catfish can get or how long a sturgeon is.
Some of that misidentification.
Just misidentification, because there's some scary looking fish in there. Gar is like a dinosaur species. It's one of those like long nose things with the, you know, the fish, and they can breathe out of their eyes or something. They can breathe air. So they're always hanging out at the surface, and they can get 6 feet long. So if you see that, not knowing, you know, expecting every fish to look like a largemouth bass, then you'd get freaked out. And then there, of course, there's like snakes in there. Snakes can get crazy long. The weirdest thing that ever happened in regards to the Lake Norman monster is my buddy Ben, who grew up on the lake, he submitted to the website one time because when he was like 8 or 9 years old, he lost his pet iguana. And he was like, if someone finds it, they're not going to know what iguana looks like. So he put on the website, like, be on the lookout for an iguana. It is not the Lake Norman monster. So he told me about that when I started getting into all this, saying like, hey, I knew about the Lake Norman monster before you even, you know, moved to Charlotte. But what's wacky is I was at it's this event in the cemetery called Voices from the Past, where people act as like famous people buried in the cemetery. So you can ask them questions about their life story and things like that. And I was just chatting up this guy, and he eventually dropped the shtick because we ran out of things to talk about. And he told me that he worked fish and wildlife for Lake Norman. And I asked him about the Lake Norman monster. And he was like, oh, you know, I mostly did vegetation stuff. But one time I got called out because a woman said that there was a monster underneath her dock. She couldn't identify it. And we went out there, and it was an iguana. And like, I asked him where it was located. He was like, oh, off of exit something was where the dock was. And it was in like 2008 or something. So the timeline matched up perfect with my buddy who lost his iguana and this lady who called Parks and Rec or Fish and Wildlife because she had a monster under her dock that was an iguana. And iguanas are not like native to North Carolina like they are for Florida. Right. So it was bizarre for it to be there.
That's funny. What are some of the characteristics and size of the Lake Norman monster that people are more of the credible sightings? What are some of the common things that people are reporting?
Well, it's funny. So this area of land was once Catawba lands, like that's the native tribe that was here and in South Carolina. But the Catawba River is what created Lake Norman. And the Catawbas, they had a legend of a large snake with the head of a horse. And that is the description that comes up today, like long with teeth and like scales that will give you a rash if you brush up against it. So it's serpentine.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. That's kind of terrifying. But
at the same time, like if you see like a large gar, an alligator gar or something like that, well, actually that's not the head of a horse, but like you can see that there are long fish like that. But those are the sightings. And one thing that I do, this will be my fifth year doing it, is I love Shark Week. on the Discovery Channel. Like, I'm a big fan of making a big deal about people talking about sharks for a week. So I decided to take that energy and apply it here. And now I've created Lake Norman Monster Week, where I just spam everyone's account with information about the Lake Norman, the history, folklore of the lake, but primarily monster sightings and things like that, to the point where, like, the in-person event for this, because it's mostly online, is I do a Lake Norman Monster Believers meetup. I'll market that, but I'll also market a Lake Norman Monsters non-believer meetup, but it'll be the same time, same place, with the idea of catching both sides of the conversation and putting them in a room together.
I love that. So yeah. When is Lake Norman Monster Week?
It's going to be 27th through the 3rd. I haven't announced it yet, because I needed to solidify the venue for the in-person event, but I have just done that yesterday. So it's fun. It's low key. It's not like your Bigfoot cruises or anything like that, but it's catching on. Like last year, I went on the radio to talk about it. The news got involved. So I would love for it to turn into like a festival, kind of like those Bigfoot fests that you have. We have one in Marion. I think one of your guests not too long ago, once again, I listened to like all of your episodes in the past like week and a half.
Thank you.
But one of your guests is going to the Marion Bigfoot Festival, and I was there at the first and second year.
That's awesome.
And then COVID happened.
Your neighbors in South Carolina, they have a lizard man, and I...
Hell yeah.
They're going to kick me for not remembering the town, but there's a town sort of... I would say east, northeast, sort of mid-state. And they have a lizard man festival for like a week or something. And they've got a parade because they have their own little cryptid down there.
It's a Bishopville.
There it is.
In Lee County. I Googled it. But no, So I'm trying, which is crazy because there is a grant that you can apply for like those highway markers, but specifically for folklore and fun history. And we are applying for it, and we just got permission to put a sign in Lake Norman State Park. Like, it'll be an officially government sanctioned sign with like a warning of the Lake Norman monster.
That's incredible.
And then also the mayor is designating a Lake Norman monster free beach where you can guarantee that you will not see the Lake Norman monster at this specific beach.
That might be a bad idea because, listen, devil's advocate here. If Norman exists and is lurking and he finds out about this, imagine he's like, you said the beach was me free, and he shows up kind of like the ghost do in Scooby-Doo. And
perfect.
Spook everybody, and then the mayor has to come out and go,
No, the mayor will be like the one from Jaws and being like, there's no problem, keep it open for 4th of July weekend.
Right, yeah exactly.
That happens, good. We'll see. We'll finally get the proof we need.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay, but that's Normie, the Lake Norman monster. But there's also the Charlotte Cat Owl, which is somewhat of a new cryptid. And by that, I mean, I'm the only one talking about it, really. So it all started from a podcast that records live, and two people were on the podcast who did not know each other, and they both told similar weird stories about like experiences with a cat owl, like a cat that turns into an owl, like shapeshifter, in different neighborhoods of Charlotte. And I sent you the link to that episode because I wanted... Did you listen to it by chance?
I'm going to be honest, I did not.
That is fine. So it's cool because I feel bad sending it to you. It's like an hour long.
Don't. And I feel bad
each of those blurbs
listening.
Each blurb is only like a minute and a half long. So you would have listened to an hour long thing only to get 3 minutes out of it. But for those folks at home and you who did not listen, and it's okay. The Katie Black Show was doing a live recording. They had two different guests. The first guy, but first off, Katie Black Show, it's not about paranormal stuff. It's about Charlotte culture. Like, they were talking about being a teacher and the other guy was a muralist. And like the last question she asks is there anything like weird you want to talk about? Like anything weird you can share? I was in the audience, her and I know each other. So like, she was like, do you know of any ghost stories? And both of them were like, no, But first guy said back in 2006, him and his buddies were driving in a car and they came across a cat in the middle of the street and they couldn't go around it. So they were trying to like scare it off, like skirt at it, honk at it. And finally, when they got close enough, the thing jumped back, sprouted wings, and then attacked their car with talon-like claws. And they said they weren't smoking or anything. I think I said that they were on the Occult Rejects project, but then I re-listened to it when I sent it to you, and they were not smoking. They were not under the influence of anything, just guys being dudes. And they come across this cat that turned into an owl and attacked them. 30 minutes later, the next guy on the podcast talks and he's like, you know, that guy told that story. That reminds me of this time where I was walking in uptown Charlotte, which is like our city center area, in these apartment complexes, or it was under construction at the time, but in First Ward. And he was walking near a construction fence, like a chain link, and on top was a cat, or he interpreted it as a cat. But as he got closer, it did sprout like shoot wings and started following him as an owl. And he said that he hadn't thought about that in years, but he too has seen a Charlotte cat owl. Now, once I heard this, me being the spooky Charlotte guy, I was immediately went to the internet and was like, has anyone else seen this? And on Reddit, no. On Instagram, no. No serious responses. But on TikTok, that's when people in the Appalachia area, like North Carolina mountains and beyond, that's when they started saying that they've heard stories like this. And there's this other cryptozoologist who has like a lot of media platforms. I asked him to look into it and he found a Cherokee legend of the Wesa Wahuhi, which is in fact a cat owl hybrid. So here we are. Now I'm telling it on your podcast, and I hope that one of your listeners may have had an experience similar to this and they can tell you and you can tell me.
With that legend, the Wesa Wahuhi.
Mm-hmm.
Was there any sort of local folklore that you found that aligned with any of this?
No, I did not. Besides the fact that like in North Carolina, or it's more Appalachia, I guess, there is the Wampus Cat. And so I get mad because like I love the Wampus Cat, but whenever people talk about it, they're always talking about the story of the Iwa. Which is that I think it was also a Cherokee legend of a woman in a tribe who was eavesdropping on elders. So they turned her into a cat or a mountain lion as like a punishment. And that's always the story you hear with the Wampus Cat, but that's not a Wampus Cat thing. It was their own thing. In this area, historically, Wampus was used as a catch-all for anything like mysterious and dangerous. So like if you didn't know what that noise was coming out of the woods, you would say it's the Wampus Cat. It was just like the boogeyman of the dark. And I was actually going to send you some articles, but I was like, do you know what? Why am I giving you homework? But in the Charlotte Observer, they did multiple stories about the Wampus Cat. And one of them that I found, and it was from like the 1930s, it was like the headline was literally like, sure enough, Wampus Cat seen at park. And they're describing these locals saying that they saw the Wampus Cat at this park, but they described it as like an 8-foot tall, hairy man who was sitting at a park bench. I'm like, that's not a Wampus Cat. That's a Bigfoot. But they called it a Wampus Cat. And then there was another article where there was like, Wampus Cat was said to be found to be a hoax, and like they found that this guy was putting horse hooves on sticks and leaving patches of like cow fur on stuff and making weird noises trying to scare people, and then going around claiming that he was like chased by a wampus, but then he admitted to the hoax. But horse hooves and cow fur, like how does that equate into a mountain lion with six legs? So this idea of a Wampus Cat changes. And that rant was all for me to get to the point that the Wampus Cat is a shapeshifter, just like our Charlotte Cat Owl.
Now, as far as the Cat Owl goes, I wonder if in your next CE5 meetup, I'd be curious to ask them if they've had any experiences with owls, because there is a little bit of a connection with aliens, abductions, and owls, or a combination thereof. So when I hear the cat yes. owl, I wonder if they've maybe seen that.
I will ask, because I haven't thought about that. But yeah, there is that connection with that in Aliens, and I don't know if I'm ready to view it in that light, to be honest. But that's interesting. Yeah, I'll ask.
I'm sure you've heard of Mothman, right?
Of course.
Okay, so I know we kind of associate that with West Virginia, but in recent years, there's been a real uptick in Chicago of seeing Mothman. Charlotte's a big city. Chicago's a big city. And you kind of think to yourself, what? How can a cryptid be in a big city like that? But for all the listeners out there, I think it's absolutely possible. And especially if it maybe has more of a supernatural, could be alien property to it. I mean,
yeah.
Before I got on here, I read a news article, and I'm going to talk about it in a further episode. But basically, this news came out that in Manhattan so far this year, that there's been over 60 confirmed UFO sightings in New York City. So for them, you guys to be experiencing your own cryptid, it's totally plausible.
Well, and yeah. And one of the CE guys, he told me a story about how he saw one of his first experiences was like a ball of plasma light in Uptown. I am way past the point of thinking that, like, they're, you know how like Savannah and like Charleston, New Orleans, they have that reputation of being haunted cities. It's everywhere. There's no reason that it's like condensed to just that one area. It's everywhere. Those guys just have played the long game with branding, and they've always leaned into it. Nothing makes them more special than the other place. It's just now here we are, we're all storytelling no matter where we are. So it makes sense that people are seeing things in a Chicago and New York.
Well, and Charlotte.
And Charlotte as well. Charlotte has made it on, what was that, Discovery, not Discovery show, like Paranormal Caught on Tape, or but it was a UFO over Uptown Charlotte. But the thing is that I put that out on the internet after it had came out, and someone said that he remembers that night, and it was a wedding party who released lanterns off the top of a hotel. And when you watch the video, the lights are right above that hotel, and you're like, if you're looking at it through the lens of like, oh, those are lanterns, small lanterns floating as opposed to like large UFOs far away, it makes sense.
It checks out. It seems like you guys are doing a really good job of cementing yourself into the weird and the spooky.
Yeah. No, Charlotte is a great place. We talked about cryptids tonight, but there's also an abundance of ghost stories as well. Myself, one of my big projects coming up is I'm going to start doing monthly tours in Elmwood Cemetery outside of Uptown as a way to fundraise for the board of directors that I'm on. So I have that coming up as well. And I am making a small cryptozoology and paranormal museum exhibit, but it is in a bottle shop, like a bar. So it'll mostly be tongue-in-cheek fun, but that's a project I have coming up as well. If you're out there and you're listening and you want to learn more about Charlotte, North Carolina, or see Charlotte-specific spooky memes, follow me at SpookyCLT. And then it's also spookyclt.com, but that's mostly just a reflection of the Instagram page.
Awesome. Well, I really appreciate you coming on tonight. I love learning things, hearing new perspectives. This might send some earthquakes through the Bigfoot world, but
it's always... I apologize in advance. People are mean.
That is true. But I think it's fun to have conversations and debates. And I always say, you know, it's important to remain open-minded. And if you're presented with new facts, be able to change your opinion on something. So I'm really grateful for your opinion and you being brave enough to come out there and kind of go against the grain. I know it can be hard to step up and do that, because you're right. People are mean. So don't be mean to him if you disagree.
I'm doubling down. I'm educating myself, so I don't sound like an idiot with some of my rebuttals, but I'm doubling down. I believe that the ghost of Philip Morris told me specifically that he created the suit for the Patterson-Gimlin film.
Well, there you have it, folks. You heard it.
Spreading the word, one podcast at a time.
Absolutely. And I appreciate the cryptid talk as well. I love learning about new cryptids and things that are happening to people's areas, because I don't think it's just specific to someplace spooky like Louisiana or just the woods. There's weird stuff happening everywhere. And I'd love to get you back on sometime for more of a spooky, well, this was spooky, but more to hear more of your ghost stories and paranormal stuff. So we'll definitely have to chat more about that. But thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for tuning into this episode of Dark Florida. And a big thank you again to Jason Tapp from Spooky CLT for sharing his stories and theories with us and some seriously wild claims. If you liked what you've heard, make sure to follow the show wherever you get your podcasts and leave a 5-star review or rating. It really helps the show. You can find me on Instagram at Dark Florida Podcasts for everything happening behind the scenes and all the spooky updates. If you've got a strange story to share or would like to be a guest, email me at darkfloridapodcast@gmail.com. I would love to hear from you. Until next time, stay curious, stay strange, and stay spooky.